Hello and welcome to this special episode of Boat Briefing. This week we bring you another fascinating talk from Boat International's recent Superyacht Design Festival in Kitzbühel, Austria. This time, Simon Schofield, Chief Technical Officer of BAR Technologies, tells us about their cutting-edge, tech-led approach to design, which was born in the America's Cup. And we start off with a short introduction by Olympic sailor and Superyacht Design Festival presenter, Shirley Robertson.
Fueled by top talent and, of course, very generous budgets, the America's Cup has long been a test bed for boundary-pushing technology. Well, BAR Technologies will be known to many of you. They were the design and engineering consultancy behind the British bid. And they've really been applying, well, many of the innovations learnt in the Cup to a wider marine application, resulting in some, I think you'll think, pretty out-of-the-box thinking, which we're starting to see already trickling into superyachting. So please welcome Chief Technology Officer Simon Schofield to tell us a little more.
Thank you, Shirley. I'm afraid I'm the engineer in the room. My slides are not going to be nearly as beautiful as the last ones we saw, but hopefully I'm still of interest. So, as Shirley said, my name's Simon Schofield, and I'm the Chief Technical Officer and one of the founders of BAR Technologies. And BAR Technologies started life as the design team for the British entry to the America's Cup in Bermuda. And the America's Cup is an interesting environment, where a lot of the technology and knowledge which is developed never makes it out of that world, because what tends to happen at the end of a cup cycle, as you may or may not know, the winner takes all, they take the commercial rights, they write the rules, they decide where it's going to be held, when it's going to be held, and what it's going to be held in. So what happens is the teams tend to kind of scale down. There's a magic merry-go-round of all the engineers, and then they all land back in a different team, and they all go out into developing the next cup boat. So very rarely does what we do in the cup find its way out into the rest of the world. So we formed BAR Technologies to take that knowledge and that tools, those techniques, that passion, and use it in the wider marine industry, specifically with a focus on decarbonisation and generally through increasing efficiency. Now, if we can increase efficiency, we need less energy. Kind of doesn't matter where that energy comes from, it makes the decarbonisation piece easier. Much of what I'm going to talk about today is from an engineering, naval architecture standpoint. So obviously, that's our background. But I think there's plenty of parallels that can be drawn to the rest of the industry. When I started thinking about this presentation, I think the thing that stood out most to me about the similarities between the Cup, what we're doing now, and your superyacht industry is the fact that we are effectively always building prototypes. When we're developing new ideas, when we're experimenting, we're doing that on things that are going to end up in a customer's hands. We're experimenting on a customer's product. And that's also very true in the America's Cup. That might not seem apparent, but it really is a moonshot. We really don't know, although we'd like to think we do, whether we're competitive or not until we get to the start line. Yes, might have an inkling if we're doing well or if we're doing badly, but it's hard. We don't know if the other teams are sandbagging, so you really don't know till you turn up on the first race of the Challenger series whether you're competitive or not. And to be honest, if you've got it wrong at that point, it's too late, you can't fix it. That lack of ability to prototype, you know, at least from an engineer's or naval architecture's perspective, can drive conservative behavior where we make small progressive steps on what we've done before. And in order to overcome that and give the engineers the confidence to make big, bold steps, we need to develop tools and digitalization that allows engineers to back their decision up with data, and data that they can trust, and data they can use to quickly evaluate a design space, and then give them the confidence to make those brave, bold decisions. And that's really what the America's Cup does really well, and that's kind of at the center of a lot of what we do as well. I was going to talk in more general terms about what we do and some of our products, and I will come to them in a minute. But I thought, having listened to the amount of discussions around AI and its use in the yachting industry, I thought I should touch on how we use it, because it is in the center of everything we do, and it has been for many years, and it is certainly in all the Cup teams. So all the America's Cup teams are entirely focused on the development of AI techniques, machine learning, and the application of those to increase performance. And interestingly, in our office, we have four teams, but by far our biggest team now is not our naval architecture team, it's our performance and simulation team. And that's made up of mathematicians and software engineers primarily, who are writing and developing our own bespoke tool sets to help us design and develop our products. And an example of that, you know, and we use this everywhere, but an easy example to talk about is the development of hull forms and hull shapes. Now, we have not, I think, drawn a hull by hand in our world, or certainly any Cup team I've been involved in probably 6 years at least. They're all an output from a design process which is machine learning driven, and the output that comes from that is always better than, you know, some of the best naval architects in the world involved in the America's Cup can produce themselves. We always beat it with machine learning techniques. And that approach is built on a series of steps where we start by imagining and parameterizing any hull shape that we think we could possibly want to investigate, using methods to develop data to train networks. Just yesterday, how we were talking about training neural networks in deep language learning models, we're doing something very similar, obviously on a much smaller data set, but developing data through CFD, through randomized CFD or other methods, feeding that into networks, training networks, and then using that to then very, very quickly explore a massive design space and let that return back to us what our optimum design solution is. The advantage for that as well is obviously we can explore a much bigger range of areas, and we have a much more multi-objective optimization process as well. You know, that those techniques have been in place for at least 5 years, but they've been constantly being developed. So one of the big developments that's happening right now is the introduction of physics-based intelligence into those networks as well. So not only are we training the networks on information that we've developed and we've given it, but it understands the physics behind a problem. So that might be, you know, maintaining Reynolds, Navier-Stokes equations within a flow domain, but in a virtual environment. It might be the use of generative design in the development of hull forms. I said that we traditionally use a parameterized hull to imagine all the shapes we want to develop. The problem there is we're still limited by our imagination of what we think a hull should look like. So now we've just developed a tool where there's no human input in the development of the hull at all. It's not based on a parametric model. It's based on a free-form artificial method for morphing and changing the hull of the shape. So it's no longer restrained by human thought, if you like. And these techniques, as I say, are almost mainstream now, right from what we're doing yachting, and we're applying them in big, big tankers as well, and across the board seeing big, big changes. So it, you know, it's here. It's mainstream for us. Our engineer's job now isn't to actually design and engineer products. It's to design and engineer the systems and the tools that can do a better job than we can at designing what we're trying to design or engineer. Talk a little bit about some of the actual projects we're involved in. So this is a really exciting application in shipping, where we're looking at decarbonising and reducing the emissions in shipping. And we developed these very large three-element wings. And these things are 45, 50 metres high off the deck, weigh 200 tonnes. They're 20 metres wide. They're huge structures. And you can see there's four fitted on this ship. And each of these wings will save, on average, around the world, a tonne and a half of fuel a day. If you're applying it in good conditions, so a transatlantic route or something, you're saving 6, even 8 tonnes of fuel a day per wing. So massive, massive savings. But just a couple of examples. So these are in production now. There is a production line set up in China, but these are a couple of examples of the early launches. So launching, you know, middle, end of last year. Top one's a Kamsarmax. So it's a bulk carrier, medium-sized bulk carrier, kind of tramps right around the world. It's on charter to Cargill, which you may or may not know. It's kind of the biggest transporter of food goods in the world. And that's fitted with two wings. And since launch, that vessel's been across from China to South America. It's gone up to Europe, across to America, back down. So it's gone right around the world. The other one's a much, much larger vessel. It's a 210,000 deadweight ton Newcastle Max, which is used to move iron ore. So that's literally tramping back and forwards from China to South America on charter to Vale, literally kind of moving out mountains is what they do. But both of these are kind of performing as we thought they'd perform, have been really, really well received. Big uptake now from the tanker market as well, and the emerging CO2 carrier market. Talking a bit about development though, coming back round to kind of AI, actually simulating the use of wings or any device on a ship is actually really, really complex. There's so many interactions that are interdependent on each other that it's really important to develop a tool that can look at the whole ship system holistically. And this is something we've been developing for many years. This started life as a VPP, a velocity prediction program that the yacht designers around you would know from the kind of the America's Cup. But rather than a traditional VPP that is effectively a force balance model, this is a collection of various neural networks, response services that interact with each other. It gives us the ability to, in a modular way, build a ship up. So we have an engine plant model, we have a propeller model, we have a hydrodynamic model, aerodynamic model, a rudder model. And not only will it predict the performance of each of those components when you combine them together, there's geometric variations in them. So we're talking about hull optimization. That can be part of this bigger system. So you're not just optimizing the hull in isolation, you're optimizing it with an understanding of how the engine model works, for example. Of course, for shipping with wind wings, we have to link it to a weather model as well, and routing, because we're very wind dependent. And I think yesterday there was a mention of how these networks can be used, or machine learning can be used in reverse. And it's exactly the way we used this tool at the start of developing this product as well. So we had that system, ship seat, that allowed us to really accurately predict the performance of a vessel. And we turned it on its head and said, this is the world routes. These are the weather conditions. These are all the historic weather conditions. What would the performance profile of a wind propulsion device look like for shipping, with no kind of idea of what physically it was going to look like? And from a kind of someone from a yacht design background, the results were quite interesting, because you'd expect traditionally you want a very efficient, very high lift or drag device. But actually, it very quickly became obvious that on a ship, it's not the case. You want something which is a lot of the time just producing the maximum amount of thrust and power you can produce. But then there's times when you need to be very efficient. Hence, we landed on a three-element wing. which is operates similar to an aircraft, really. You know, an aircraft, when it's in level flight, has a very efficient wing, very high lift to drag ratio. When it wants to maximize the amount of power it can produce, when it's landing or taking off, it turns into a three-element wing, which is giving up some drag, but it's producing much, much more lift. And that's what we do along the way. So completely changing tack now to the other end of the world that we're involved in. So we've gone from massive ships with wings to electrification of vessels. And this is a really exciting project we did last year. But first, I want to talk about the foiling before we get to the vessel itself. So obviously, for smaller vessels, a big drive for electrification. If you want range, you know, you can't get better than hydrofoiling. So, you know, if you look at a motorboat such as this, you know, fully foiling is reducing the energy consumption by about 85% compared to a traditional planing vessel. Also increases comfort, and I'll come to it later, but increases comfort the whole time, not just when you're foiling, not just when you're flying. There's a misconception that when it gets wavy, a foiling boat's going to be dangerous or uncomfortable. Actually, if you do it right, it's always better. And of course, it reduces wake and it reduces noise. The engine is mounted underwater. There's no engine. Also, the motor is mounted underwater. There's no engine. There's no motors. You know, the boat, when you're on the boat, is completely silent. So this is a project we did for an owner in collaboration with Spirit Yachts. So they styled the boat and they built the wooden hull for us and then delivered it down to us in Portsmouth, where we fitted all the tech. And it was good. It was a quick project, from literally me having a semi-drunken conversation with the owner one night to launching the boat was 18 months. And it, you know, it really is a turnkey solution for the owner. So we've got the main foiling system, which you'll see are made up of kind of carbon foils with titanium flaps. And they differ. Foiling of motorboats differ from foiling sailing boats. You see these dramatic images of America's Cup boats going down the mine where they do a big nosedive. Foiling motorboats don't do that. The reason sailing boats do that is their center of thrust, the thing that's driving them forwards, is up the rig, is up high, it's from the sails. So that's always trying to pitch the vessel down. But you can imagine in our case, our drive is coming from low down. So if anything, it wants to go bow up, not bow down. So you're always fighting roll and never pitch. So on a foiling motorboat, pitch response is really, really easy. And what your biggest driver is, having flight control that controls the ride height and the roll accurately. And again, that's another self-learning system. So more we drive this boat, more it encounters new environments, better it is. Then we've got the electrical system, 800 volt, pretty much stolen from the automotive industry, if I'm fair. They're LG modules, same ones you'd see in a Porsche, just repackaged in a carbon frame with some different cooling methods. We have a massive heat sink in the sea. But same battery management systems, same safety interlocks and the like. And then a custom motor, you know, and this is the motor here. And through the 800 volt, we can get that motor really small. This vessel does 30 knots. It's only using about 46 kilowatts of power. That motor will produce, if we fully wind it, about 150 kilowatts. It's 150 mil in diameter and 17 kilos. So it's amazingly power dense. So, you know, takes off, I say 100% electric, takes off at 14 knots, top speed of 30, and a range on a single charge of 100 nautical miles, and that's at cruise speeds. That's at 22, 24 knots, we'll do 100 miles. The foils are fully retractable, so they come up into the hull, so the owner can take it into the beach or into his dock. This one converts from two-seaters to six-seaters, fits in a 40-foot container. So this belongs to the owner of a sailing boat, and the container kind of travels around the world after him. It's also quick to charge. You know, the high-speed charging network is definitely rolling out. around the world, just like it is with cars. But it's got three 32-amp onboard chargers as well, so you can turn up to any marina, plug it in, and it'll charge in about 4 hours. And once you've done 100 miles on a boat like that, you're fine. Thank you.
If you don't know the Isle of Wight, it's actually quite a long way around.
It is.
70 miles all the way around. I very much like the fact that you did it. You wanted to do it.
Right.
You wanted to do it. Thank you so much. Very, very interesting. I have seen that boat quite a lot. It was zipping around the Solent a lot of last summer, and it's very impressive. It's certainly a head turner. So congratulations with that. I guess there's sort of a more general question. The technology around foiling, also around ships and wings and efficiency, is pretty well established now. It's not new.
It's not.
But when I look at our industry, there's sort of a reluctance, a slowness perhaps, to adopt it. Why do you think that is?
I think that is coming back to where I started, that we're playing with people's toys. We're not prototyping. And unless we can be sure that what we say we're going to do is going to succeed, then we're taking a risk with potentially owners' vessels. So if the data's there and you've got high fidelity simulations and you can trust the data and you can actually convince yourself that you're not taking a risk, I think it makes the adoption of new things much, much easier.
If I'm a super yacht captain and we're ordering a new tender, should I be confident about saying, yeah, let's have a foiling boat? What do you think, my reservations would be?
Yeah, I mean, we say it's established, but it's still quite niche. There's only probably five companies in the world that are writing good flight control software. To be honest, the electrification bits, that's being done lots now. That's not that hard. It's about the flight control. It's about the integration of those systems. But I think with the right partners and the right people, it's a much better experience for the crew, it's a much better experience for the owners. And I touched on the fact that when it gets rough, we have something called skimming mode, where you're not flying, but you're just skipping from crest of wave to crest of wave. I remember we were in Saint-Tropez doing the regatta there, and you'd see after racing, everyone heads back up to their apartments and where they're staying, and you see all the ribs and even some of the larger kind of 40, 50 foot tenders bouncing around, and we've got our owner sitting on the back. We're not flying, we've got too many people in the boat, but dead level, having a lovely time, and people saying, I don't want to foil, I just want to not bounce around like that. It's such a more comfortable experience.
Just a final question for me on shipping. I guess they're really driving efficiency. They've no choice. It's legislation. They have to find a solution. Are they really driving, alternative wind power options here?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a massive change in the last 18 months, since COVID ended, really. I think, obviously, there's a lot of legislation coming their way. You've got the European Emissions Trading Scheme came into force this year. So now already it's hurting the shipping industry's pocket. They're having to pay tax on their emissions. They've got a roadway between now and 2030 and now and 2050 from the IMO. And they're not panicked, but I think they took a long, hard look at themselves and said, we've got to fix this or, our businesses are at risk. So we've seen a massive uptake in wind, a massive uptake in hull optimization. So a big part of our business is redesigning ship hulls now, and you'd think a ship hull is super efficient on a bulk carrier. It's been developed and refined for tens of years, but the reality is with new techniques we're finding double digit savings on some of these hulls.
Any questions for Simon?
Hi, an impressive presentation, thank you. What was the cost of the foiling and electric system in that wooden boat?
That one was a prototype system. So the entire system was probably about £400,000.
Okay, thank you.
Is that our only question about money? Here we go, Bill.
Are you a believer in full sailing ships?
I think there will be some in some very specific applications. I don't think they'll be adopted mainstream. It means we've all got to change the way we behave. You know, it means that things are not going to arrive when we think they arrive. I think where we're going to see a bigger adoption going forwards of the wind propulsion in ships is to enable the use of future fuels. So effectively, shipping is looking at methanol and ammonia in the kind of medium and long term for their shipping. They are much more voluminous, so we need more tankage. They're much, much more expensive. You know, you're talking $700 a ton of fuel at the moment. With a methanol, even in 5 years' time, they're expecting that to be 2,500 or 3,000 for the equivalent amount of energy. So by burning 30-40% less of that fuel, it becomes more economically viable, and you're taking less away from the carrying capacity of the ship as well through increased bunkering.
Thank you for a great answer.
It's got a new battery in it. We're all good.
Yes, thank you very much for your presentation. I wanted to know, are you able to do some computer fluid dynamic simulation of the foil impact and how the boat will behave if this is happening in terms of safety?
Impact resistance, yes. something we've done a lot of, actually. It's more of an energy kind of equation problem than a fluid dynamics problem. But yeah, we've done a lot of simulation. And we've done a lot on that boat of real-life testing as well. A couple of my engineers spent quite a lot of time with body armour and helmets on, and a control engineer sitting remotely with a laptop making flaps and foils do things they shouldn't do and hanging on and seeing the results. So those models have been quite well verified now as well.
Okay, good then.
Thank you.
Quickly, the flight software, is that something that was developed in-house?
Yes. So started in the CUP. And then it's continually been developed since.
And just lastly, what sort of size range would that particular, that's Spirit Boats, what size range would that work inside of?
So we're looking at 40-foot vessels at the moment we're working on. Depends a little bit how fast you're going, how quick you're going, but, you know, I can see 100-foot foiling vessels in the relatively near future.
Flight software is so advanced now. It's come a long way in 5 years, hasn't it?
I mean, that's amazing. You can choose the way it feels as well. So when I'm driving it, for example, I've got a very different way I like it to feel to someone else. The way it banks into a turn, the way it commits, the way it rolls you. And you can tune all those knobs, and you can sit there with the owner. And, you know, exactly what we did. I spent a week with him on the lake saying, how do you like it to feel when you do this, or how does it respond to these situations?
Tough life, isn't it? Hanging out on Lake Como with a nice wooden boat. Ladies and gentlemen, massive round of applause for Simon. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Boat Briefing, which was a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.